Brilliant novels, groundbreaking nonfiction, evocative poetry, great books, and insightful conversations whenever you want them on the Talk of Iowa Book Club podcast. Pick the books that speak to you or read them all. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Next week will mark the 100th anniversary of the birth of iconic actress Donna Reed. Originally from Denison, Iowa, her career spanned 40 years, and she was beloved for The Donna Reed Show on television, her Academy Award-winning role in From Here to Eternity, and millions of people still watch her every year in the movie It's a Wonderful Life. She played Mary Hatch Bailey.
Dance by the light of the moon.
What'd you wish when you threw that rock?
Oh, no.
Come on,
no.
Tell me.
If I told you, it might not come true.
What is it you want, Barry? What do you want? You want the moon? Just say the word and I'll throw a lasso around it and pull it down. Hey, that's a pretty good idea. I'll give you the moon, Barry.
I'll take it.
That's the voice of Donna Reed, of course, there with Jimmy Stewart in It's a Wonderful Life. And to help us get to know Donna Reed, we've invited someone who knew her very well. Her daughter, Mary Owen, is here with us. Hello, Mary.
Hello. Good. So great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's wonderful to have you here. And you are the youngest of four in your family. So let's do a little bit of history before we talk about your life with your mother and how you knew her. But she grew up in Denison, Iowa, and was drawn into theater and the performing arts. And she moved out to California. Tell me a little bit about her early career with the studio system out there.
Well, you know, she had an aunt who lived in Los Angeles, and so she had invited her out to go to college. So she attended Los Angeles City College, and the last year of her schooling, they started the beauty contest. That was the first year, and they still do it to this day. She won the beauty contest, of course, and she was on like the first float in the Rose Bowl parade, and of course the picture of her got in the Los Angeles Times. So from that, you know, lots of interest from agents, both in, you know, modeling and in the movie industry, but she put them off because she wanted to finish college in case the acting thing didn't work out. So she signed an 8-year contract with MGM, and so they started her, you know, in these kind of early films, you know, the Andy Hardy series, things like that, which she actually, you know, she started off a little bit of a troublemaker because she didn't really want those roles. I think she found them a little too ordinary. But you know, she was in them anyway. And then, of course, World War II started. And I mean, to me, kind of what starts her legacy is her participation in the war effort. Of course, everyone did in those days, actors as well, you know, performing for soldiers and things like that. And my mother did, but she also wrote to, you know, she wrote back to soldiers who wrote to her.
Well, let's make sure we understand the magnitude of the letters that she received, because it was very common back then for soldiers to receive pinup pictures, photos of women in Hollywood. And she was one of those women. They were sending these glossy photos to the GIs, but she got so many personal letters, hundreds, probably more than that. I mean, I know that she saved more than 300 of those letters. But tell me a little bit about what you know about the letters she was receiving from the GIs during that time.
Right. Well, I think, you know, the studio had invented this, you know, idea of the pinup culture. And I really think it cannot be underestimated, because they really were almost like talisman, you know, the way the guys would pin up these pictures and letters and things in their barracks. And especially my mother, you know, she really represented the home front. I mean, so did Betty Grable, so did Rita Hayworth. But my mother was a little younger than them. And so I think for the guys who really enlisted as soon as they could, she really represented what they wanted to come home to and survive, right? Because they were in a war.
Right.
So it's huge.
And she wrote back to all of those soldiers who wrote to her?
Well, you know, I wasn't around, so right. I don't know. But I know she started a group with other actresses to meet once a week so they would answer letters. And, of course, several of, you know, many letters that I have say, you know, thank you, I received your picture and letter. So,
oh, that's lovely. That is just lovely. So she was a little frustrated with some of the sort of, I don't know, factory type roles that she was receiving. They churned out film after film after film in those days. And she was in three or four movies a year during the early 40s. And she wanted to break out of that. Now, one of her iconic roles I just played a clip from was in Frank Capra's It's a Wonderful Life. And that was not made by MGM. She was actually lent to RKO Pictures for that role.
They called it being loaned out, and I think the studios were mad at her, MGM, for doing that, too. They tried to tack on, like, three more years to her already eight-year contract, but she didn't allow that. But, yes, she had to have been so excited to work with Capra. I mean, he and Jimmy Stewart, this was their first film together after the war, and they had participated in the war effort. So there was a different feeling on the set because they'd been away from Hollywood. And plus, I think she felt like it was her break. It was more of a starring role. It wasn't, you know, a B MGM picture. And she was working with Frank Capra, who was, you know, independent minded and a visionary. And she said it was the most satisfying work she'd ever done on a picture ever.
Wow. Well, and of course, what an amazing thing how that film endures and people watch it again and again, of course, every year around Christmas time. What does that feel like to know that people are enjoying your mother's work today in such a really intense and beautiful way?
It's incredible because, I mean, first of all, right, what 75-year-old movie still speaks to so many people around the world? But I've been lucky enough in New York and other places that it's being shown in theaters so often now in December that I get to introduce it. So I actually share with people this whole experience of, you know, because everyone has a relationship to this movie at this point. So, you know, and my mom's been gone a long time, so it's kind of a nice way to celebrate the holidays, you know, without her and with her.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I also want to play a clip from the role that won her an Academy Award. Mm. And this is the World War II drama From Here to Eternity. She played Alma Lorraine Burke, girlfriend of Montgomery Clift's character. Let's listen to a little bit.
I enlisted too. I came out here on my own to get away from my hometown in Oregon.
How come?
I had a boyfriend. I was a waitress and he was from the richest family in town. He just married a girl suitable for his position. After 3 years of going around with me. It's a pretty story, isn't it? Maybe they could write a book about it.
They did. Thousands of them.
So I left and went to Seattle. When I got there, I met a girl just back from Hawaii, and she said she'd made a lot of money working there. So I caught the first boat. I've been here a year and 2 months.
You don't like it very much, do you?
Oh, I don't like it, but I don't mind it. Anyway, I won't be here forever.
No, sure. I mean, why should you?
I got it all figured out. In another year, I'll be back home with a stocking full of money. And I'll be all set for life.
That's just a scene from Here to Eternity. Mm-hmm. And of course, your mother received the Academy Award for that. That was still before your time. But what did that mean to her? Did she talk about that?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, my God, it doesn't get any better than that. Plus, you know, that movie was a struggle for her because the director didn't want her or Frank Sinatra, oddly enough. And of course, they were ended up being the Oscar winners. But no, I mean, my God, she got to break out from being sort of the sweetheart roles that she'd been given and work, you know, in this film that was like probably one of the first kind of anti-military films, you know, to come out of World War II and just all that bitterness. I mean, the way she got to act and the whole feeling of the film. Yeah, it was a struggle because, you know, they hadn't done enough close-ups. And she noticed that when she looked at the dailies. So she went to the editor instead of the director because she understood that the director wasn't, you know, crazy about her. So she went to the editor and he agreed with her, and then that's how they reshot some scenes that were more appropriate and close up.
Well, and that was the kind of role she was longing to do. She got the credit for it, I mean, obviously, but then she had a lot of films that she didn't feel very strongly about. Let's kind of skip forward in time and talk about the Donna Reed Show, which was on television from 1958 to 1966. And of course, she played a homemaker on that show. She was warm and beautiful and clever. What do you think was important about that role?
Well, I mean, when I look at it now, I see, especially the earlier seasons, you know, I see her so happy to be in control of her career. Because, you know, after the Oscar, they put her in B Westerns. And then so she was complaining about that and was done. You know, she just felt like Hollywood didn't know what to do with her. So she started a production company with my father, who was a producer, and they made a couple of movies and then decided to try television. So they were really, you know, after Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz, really the only other couple that did this. And so the show was her responsibility. I mean, not only, you know, did it have her name on it, but, you know, my dad was the principal architect, and she took her responsibility of speaking to American families very seriously. And, you know, she was like a busy supermom.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask about that because you are the child of a superstar, and you came along at the time when her fame was really at its pinnacle. That must have been challenging in a lot of ways.
It was. It really was because, you know, she had a huge career and family at home. I mean, there were four of us, but my siblings were older. And yeah, when you're on the small screen, everyone recognizes you. So when we went to the store, we went grocery shopping, you know, and she was always very kind to people who wanted to stop and talk and sign autographs. But as a little kid, you know, I just wanted to be alone with my mother. So I hated all of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
She also became very politically active a little later on. She was very outspoken in opposing the Vietnam War, and she also opposed nuclear power plants. And that must have been, that seems like a fairly unusual thing for a woman in her position at that time to speak out in that way. She was America's sweetheart in so many ways. What was that time like?
That was a great time. I mean, I was a little older, and she was so excited. I mean, of course, she opposed the war. It started off mainly because I had two brothers. My two brothers were of draft age. And she and Barbara Avedon, who started as a writer and then a director on the Donna Reed Show, you know, co-chaired Another Mother for Peace. And, you know, I would go to this, they like rented this warehouse, and there were all these women like working together and writing speeches. And, you know, I was there like stuffing envelopes and helping as I could. I was, you know, like 9 years old or whatever. And the energy was incredible. And I think she just was so satisfied with that work and, you know, writing letters to Nixon and, you know, taking on Kissinger and, you know, and then when the war was over, they went into nuclear. But, you know, she risked her identity and her kind of image to do this. But she loved it.
Yeah. You lost your mom back in 1986. And one of the beautiful things that you and others worked to do is really create an opportunity to carry on her legacy with the Donna Reed Foundation for the Performing Arts, now over 30 years old. And of course, there's the annual Donna Reed Festival in Denison. You actually moved back to Iowa to mark this centennial. Tell me what you have planned and why this is important.
Well, she bequeathed her Oscar to Denison. And then one thing led to another with some local journalists and her husband at the time, and they established the foundation. And her archive is there. She saved everything from the film career, everything from the television show. We bought the old German opera house. Now it's the Donna Reed Theater. And, you know, of course, thanks to COVID, it's a little dark right now, but we do have events there, and we give scholarship opportunities to kids who are going on to study in the performing arts. But for now, we have a lot of online things planned for her birthday. There's a Remembering Donna Reed at 10 a.m. on January 27th, and that's going to be streaming live on Facebook on all the Department of Cultural Affairs sites on Facebook. So that's, you know, the State Historical Society, the Donna Reed Foundation. We have our own website, which is donnareed.org. Then later on in the at March 25th, I'll be hosting 100 Years of Donna Reed with the State Historical Society. That will also be online. Turner Classic Movies will be doing something all day, and they will also be part of the Facebook live streaming as well. So there's a lot of goodies going on, and I encourage people to, you know, go on Facebook or check us out at donnareed.org.
How do you want people to remember your mom?
Well, you know, I mean, you covered kind of the high points. I mean, the iconic roles in as Mary Hatch Bailey, as Alma in From Here to Eternity, you know, her activism, the way that she was able to give back in a concrete way, not any way to, you know, enhance her celebrity or anything like that. And, you know, she was just incredibly beautiful, incredibly humble, and, you know, so intelligent. And I feel like she's part of our American heritage, and she was like a great American woman in history.
Well, and it's lovely how dedicated she was to Denison, even though she had left there.
Yeah.
It's wonderful to have the Donna Reed Foundation in Denison. You didn't grow up in Iowa. So how do you feel about your connection to this state?
Well, I did spend a lot of summers in Denison and stayed with my Aunt Sandy and Uncle Bill when I was little. And that was so fun because, I mean, I grew up in Beverly Hills, and in Denison, I mean, I would go out with my cousins and we would just spend the day, you know, we'd go play in the river or, you know, ride a horse somewhere. I mean, we were just completely free on our bicycles, and people were so friendly and, you know, kind of open. And I'm very happy to be in Iowa City now. I feel like it's just, it's nice to be in touch with a kind of depth of feeling towards my mother and just, you know, out of the big city and be somewhere where it's peaceful.
Well, Mary, thank you so much for talking with us and for sharing your mom with all of us.
Thank you. Yeah.
Mary Owen, the daughter of Donna Reed. We're going to go out with some music here from The Donna Reed Show. And Thursday, the 27th of January, marks the 100th anniversary of Donna Reed's birth. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.
In a time like none of us have experienced before, there's strength to be found in community institutions like Iowa Public Radio. I'm Executive Director Myrna Johnson, and I'm so proud of the thoughtful, informed coverage IPR brings you on the issues that matter. Listener funding is the power source that makes it all possible. Facts, understanding, insight, that's what you fund when you give to this station. Make your gift now at iowapublicradio.org, and thank you.